Coming to you direct from the nerve center of the galaxy's greatest comic. This is the 2000 AD Thrillcast.
Borag Thong Earthlets, and welcome to another packed episode of the 2000 AD Thrillcast. I am your host, Molchar, and we have not one, not two, not three, but four amazing guests who will be talking about everything from graphic novels to answering your questions. And if you've sent a question in, then I've got a very nice surprise for you later. First off, we're going to be talking to Keith Richardson and Kat Symes, who are the two people who are responsible for putting out our graphic novels. After the great response to the behind the scenes episode last time, we thought we'd get them in to talk a little bit about how the graphic novel was put together, and particularly some of the really high-end prestige editions that we're doing at the moment. If you've not checked out Dan Dare, the 2000 AD Years Volume 1, which has just come out in hardback, then I really recommend it because it is a beautiful thing. Also, the Judge Dredd Case Files number 1 10th Anniversary Edition, which has some brand new scans of the artwork, and also Colour Pages Restored. These are really beautiful artifacts, perfect for your Christmas stocking. We're also going to be talking to Paul Goodwin, who is the director of Future Shock, the story of 2000 AD, which is a documentary that's been at festivals and shows for a little while now, but is about to come out on DVD and on demand. So we're going to talk to him about interviewing some of the galaxy's greatest comics, greatest creators, as well as telling the story of 38 years of thrill power. It's a really great documentary that I recommend you all check out, but we're going to talk to Paul a little bit about that later. And then we have Ask Tharg, where we're going to be answering some of your questions to the Mighty One himself. But first, a quick rundown of what's out from 2000 AD this week. First off is 2000 AD Prog 1958, which includes some awesome Judge Dredd, some amazing Defoe, some brilliant Brass Sun, and some increasingly excellent Bad Company, along with a one-off Terror Tale. Absolutely fantastic stuff, available in digital and print from today. Last week also saw the publication of the latest issue of Judge Dredd magazine, number 366, which is absolutely packed with goodness. You've got Judge Dredd in there, obviously. You've got the end of Storm Warning. You've got Demon Nick, and you've got Lawless as well. And personal favourite in the bagged reprint copy that comes with the physical edition, it also attached to the PDF when you buy it digitally, you have Tyranny Rex, however you want to pronounce it, by John Smith, with some great artwork from Mark Buckingham. Those of you who've ever read Fables will know, or indeed Marvel Man, will know Mark's work. And also you've got Paul Marshall in there as well. That's a great strip that I remember very much enjoying when I read it originally in 2000 AD. That is a fantastic bundle for not a lot of money. So please do rush out and buy them in print and digital if you can. As mentioned on the last episode, we talked a little bit about the behind-the-scenes things that go into the making of 2000 AD and the Judge Dredd magazine, but those aren't the only things that we publish, obviously. We also have our graphic novel collections that that come out on a regular basis. And after having Matt and Sam and Oz in the Sam booth last time, I thought I would get the team who make these graphic novels happen. Keith Richardson, who is our graphic novels editor, and also Catherine Symes, who's our reprographics droid, very kindly came into the sound booth to talk to me about how you put together these incredible thrill-powered volumes that we put out every month. And I'd like to welcome Keith Richardson and Kat Symes to the Thrillcast. Welcome to the Nerve Centre sound booth.
Yes, at last.
So we had a nice chat with Matt and Oz and Sam last week, last episode, about how they put 2000 AD together. So I thought this episode we'd talk about the graphic novels. Keith, let's kick off with you. We've had some, as we discussed last time, some really big graphic novel news in the last month or so. Tell our listeners a little bit about how you go about putting together the schedule for the graphic novels from 2018.
Okay, well, sorry, everyone, I've just got back from Thought Bubble. I don't know what I'm talking about. In terms of selecting what to kind of include on the schedule, the main thing we like to do is get a balance of new material and old material, and also a good balance of different kind of stories as well. So that's usually how we determine what we're going to put out. And we also like to have a really kind of juicy classic every year that hasn't seen the light of day for a while, or something a little bit more special. The next big one for us, I guess, is going to be the Cursed Earth Uncensored.
Coming out in July, is that?
I believe it is. We can kind of fit in another date. If I don't have my schedule in front of me, Mike, you should know by now, I've got the brain of a sieve. So it possibly is out around then. That would make sense to coincide with San Diego Comic-Con.
Yep.
That's a really exciting title that we've got coming up, and it's a good example of a kind of classic work that hasn't seen the light of day for a while.
Yeah.
But we constantly, you know, we've got other kind of, we'll have other titles out, such as Britsit Noir, which is an anthology of Britsit stories. Mm-hmm. So we just like to mix it up a little bit and, you know, just provide good, decent thrills for people.
Because 2000 AD and the magazine, every week, every month, we're putting out new material. So there's a lot of stuff sort of building up.
Massive wealth of material.
What's your thought process about what gets collected immediately and what people are going to have to wait a little while to see in their collection?
Right, but there's always a demand for Dread.
Yeah.
So we always need to have some Dread ready to go. Case Files, for example, I think we're currently putting out about 4 a year in the UK editions alone, and people are still asking for much more. So we've always, we try and kind of have a case file out every 4-ish months or every 3 months. So that's almost got, it's almost cemented on the schedule year to year. Everything else, really, it's just a matter of timing. Like if we have a title that everyone seems to gravitate towards, or something that's got a bit of a buzz towards it, we like to release those books around the time of a big convention, as we have done in the past with Zenith, and as we're going to be doing with we did it with Dark Justice as well, didn't we?
And
as we're going to be doing with the Cursed Earth. But apart from that, I mean, there's no real kind of way we just plan it out. It's just good to have a mix across the year. I wouldn't want to release like 5 Dread books in the first 3 months. It's good to have other stuff around. But you can kind of gauge straight away what people gravitate towards when it appears in the magazine or 2000 AD. Something, for example, like I would say Absalom was a kind of, it seemed to be an automatic favourite.
Yeah.
You hear about it at conventions and people in the office get excited about it. I myself get excited about it. So I'm like, that's going to be getting collected up very soon because it's so good.
Okay. We're doing a lot more prestige editions, the big, thick, hardback ones. So Dan Dare's just come out. We've had the Robusters book, the Mech Files, the Cursed Earth Uncensored book is going to be a nice, thick hardback.
Yes, indeed.
Why present material that, you know, we've printed, apart from something like Dan Dare, that we've printed many times before? Why do it in a new format? Isn't that just kind of trying to get people to buy the same thing again?
Because it deserves it, to be quite honest. Some beautiful work out there, and why not collect it up as best possible? I mean, case in point, with the Zenith book, once we found out that Steve had all the original pages, I mean, that is the best way to present that stuff. Just the size he drew it at, the scale he drew it at, with all those beautiful notes on the page, just all the original pages in, it just had to be done that way. And I would do that for every single book if we had all originals. I shouldn't say that, should I, really?
Because
I get inundated and stuff. I think that's the best possible format to collect anything up in. You know, in the past, we've had to, and this is no no slight on Rebellion or past editors, but we've had to grayscale certain stories, which hasn't been ideal.
Where there's been colour that we can't reproduce,
And that's always a real crying shame. I just think I want to present the stuff as good as it possibly can be, as good as it can possibly look. After all, it's a visual medium as well as it just deserves that TLC. We've got like such an amazing back catalogue, and we've got some great new stories as well. Yeah. And I just want to show them off in that light.
Yeah. Well, that brings us nicely on to Kat. You've been our Reprographics droid for
13 years.
Wow. For those people who don't understand what that means, what, when you work in Reprographics, what are your duties? How what's your day-to-day work?
I would say that my main job is to make the art look as good as the day it was printed or drawn, if I can. So I'm not actually doing anything to the artwork. I'm just trying to bring it back to life and make it look as good as it intended to be.
Sure.
And along the way, you know, there are also minor mistakes, shall we say, in old artwork, which can't be corrected anymore because it's not a file.
Yeah.
So part of my job is to make it look brilliant, and the other job is to not look like I've touched it, if you know what I mean.
Sure. So is this is a combination of scanning and Photoshop and things like that?
Well, yeah, scanning is the easy bit. The Photoshop is the most hardest thing I have to do because the job differs so much from page to page and story to story.
Sure.
Some will just need simple cleaning up. Some will need a lot of work depending on the material I have to work with. In the case of Dan Dare, it took me a year to do the book.
Blimey.
Just over a year. That's the longest I've ever spent on a book.
And I mean, the biggest challenge ultimately is that people kind of think we have these huge files with everything we've ever published in. But of course, the files were handed to us when Rebellion bought 2000 AD.
Yeah.
They weren't in a very good state, were they?
No.
They turned up a few years afterwards. In fact, I started in, I think it was April 2003.
Yeah.
As an ad space droid. coming in the back way.
Yeah. Ooh-ah. Yeah.
All
right, Sid James.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. And a few of us went down to a lockup in King's Cross to pick up all the film. And we literally opened this door up and there was just a avalanche of film and paper and rubbish. So to Kat's credit and to a lot of other people who have kind of helped out, the fact that we've got our archive in the state that it's in is a good thing, but it still needs lots of work. No one's fault, it's the way we inherited it. But I think a large part of your work, you would say, involves hunting down.
If I'm lucky, yeah. If I find anything, it's usually by absolute chance.
Right.
So,
right.
Hence, that's another part of my job, is hunting for it in the first place.
And I guess even if you find files, they're not in the best nick. They're often they weren't done right at the time.
Yeah.
What kind of challenge does that present to you as the person who does the Reprographics?
It really depends what I have to work with in the first place. I mean, on the rare occasion, can we mention the Sooner or Later book coming out?
Yeah.
That is a very rare book because it is completely original artwork. I found all the pages for it.
Wow.
So that is an extremely rare but satisfying conclusion.
Yeah.
And then the other part is bits that I find film for and only have page scan. I have to try and make the page scan look as good as a film scan, so you wouldn't notice. So, like Dan Dare, thankfully I found 99% of the film for that.
Right.
Hence why it looks as good as it does. Mm. And it just makes my job so satisfying to see it like that compared to the bog roll it was printed on.
Yeah.
Because it just doesn't do it justice. And I think, was it you said last year, had somebody mentioned that the colours looked bad in mech files?
Yeah, it was somebody who was moaning about them.
Because it was digitally coloured wrong. I was like, well, because it's not.
No.
It looks like that because that's how it was originally.
Absolutely.
My job is not to change the art, is to just bring it back to life.
Mm.
And, you know, if the fans appreciate that and more, you know, I'm really happy.
Sure. Well, it's kind of one of the unsung roles in all of this. It's not just a case of, you know, diving into a computer file and bringing it out. These things have to be lovingly kind of teased back into life. What's been I guess you've already mentioned it, the Dan Dare book, but what's been the most challenging thing that you've worked on?
I would probably say the Mech Files 1.
Oh, right, actually, okay.
Because right. It was all annual stories.
Right.
And unfortunately, it's a case of, you know, a lot of times when it was first printed, the registration is out slightly or the speech isn't that visible. And it's because I have nothing else to work with, it's taking the time to make those pages look 10 times better than they were.
Sure.
And sometimes you get things in the speech bubbles where there are actually mistakes in the spelling.
Right.
Part numbers are wrong and even credit boxes are wrong. But because it's not a file anymore, I have to go and physically change it. So, you know, if you noticed it before and it looks all right now, then it looks like I haven't touched it. That's brilliant.
I mean, that's an interesting aspect because with the announcement about the Misty book that we're bringing out next year, a lot of people asked whether we were going to be colouring it, whether we were going to be changing certain aspects. But aside from where, I mean, you've already mentioned credit boxes and things like that. Aside from that, we don't interfere with this stuff because there's no point, is there?
It would be a complete disservice, just completely disrespectful to those creators that worked on that in the first place. I don't think you need to change anything in there. We just present it as well as we can, as close to how it was originally published. I don't see why we would have to tweak anything. It's the same as a couple of people were asking if we were going to commission a new ending to Dan Dare.
In
Volume 2. And no, it is as it was. And there's a great ending out there in all your heads. And that's the ending you should go for. You don't need that. It's beautiful. It ends okay. Yeah. It didn't continue. But that was it. We're not going to add to it now.
Well, that's the thing. It's 2080. The mission is really to kind of find lots of new stuff and be exciting and move things forward that way. But treating the past with a respect that it's not necessarily been treated with previously.
Exactly. I mean, every now and then we've put together. Cat kind of done a lot of work on Planet of the Damned, which was from Star-Lord, and that's looking amazing. All the colour pages are as they were in Star-Lord.
Yep.
And it all looks very great. Sometimes we've got a half page of art, we have then substituted the old adverts that were in the actual comic and swapped them out for just something a bit more relevant.
Yeah.
And of course, in the case of Planet of the Damned, we commissioned a new cover from an American artist called Mike Hoffman, and it looks fantastic. But only because there weren't any strong Planet of the Damned covers on Star-Lord, or none that we could really kind of work. So in some cases, you have little occurrences like that where you might tweak stuff. But as for the actual art itself, no, we don't touch that. Speech bubbles, no, we just accentuate what's already there.
Sure. Yeah. This coming year, we've got a lot of stuff coming out. In fact, over the last few years, we've had a lot of stuff come out, got a lot of stuff scheduled, which are kind of the holy grails that people never thought they would see again. So, Zenith, Cursed Earth and Centre, Dan Dare. If there was something, not necessarily just from 2000 AD, but thinking about the kind of stablemates and the contemporaries of 2000 AD, is there something that has not been collected before that you would absolutely love to get your hands on and see in a beautiful, big, pristine edition?
Some of it's been collected by the lovely folks over at Hibernia, but I just think the complete Doom Lord.
Oh yes,
would be amazing, and I would package it with a Doom Lord mask, like that Batman Court of Owls, kind of style, or a nice Doom Lord ring. Don't read into that, folks. An actual ring. I'm talking about an actual ring here, because I think Doom Lord was hands down one of the best comic strips ever.
Absolutely,
and highly underrated.
Even when it was the photo strips.
Yeah. The photo strips were amazing, and I think they actually haven't been collected up again.
I don't think they have.
Hibernia certainly didn't collect up the photo strips.
No,
they're a pain to work on. They are the worst.
I think we're giving Kat palpitations over this.
Well, because somebody said, "Are you going to do? You've done such a good job on Dread Case Files 1.
Yeah,
it's brilliant. oh, are you going to do Strontium Dog next? I was like, rather not.
This is true. But, you know, I don't know about Cat, but as far as I'm, you know, the sky's, there's so many old strips I would love to kind of collect. I mean, Ron Smith's King Cobra, simply because it's Ron Smith's art. A complete Leopard and Lime Street, I'd like to collect that up. There's so many. There's so many. Even the Eagle Dan Dare.
The one thing I've always wanted to see collected is the 1980s Eagle reboot. The Dan Dare artwork in that was lush.
Yeah,
very nice.
I did hanker after the photo strips. I must have liked. Joe Soap was pretty special. And I think it was it Mannix or Mantronix? There was a photo strip called Mantronix.
I don't remember that one.
I'm sure. Well, you know, it has been a heavy weekend, but I'm sure there was. I might live to regret saying that. Someone's going to call me out on it.
Well, we have wandered not just to the edge of our hangovers, but also off the point. But I want to thank you both for coming in and chatting about the graphic novels. Looking forward to seeing what we come up with next year. So
have to wait and see, won't you?
Absolutely.
With, you know, with 2017 coming up, with the 40th anniversary.
Yeah.
I mean, that's going to be a really exciting year.
Mm. Got some tricks up your sleeve.
Yeah, I think people can expect a lot of great stuff.
Excellent.
So yeah, just stay in work and save that money because it's going to be an expensive one.
Brilliant. Well, thanks very much, Keith and Kat.
Thank you.
Thank you, Malcha.
So thanks again to Keith and Kat for coming in and chatting about how we put graphic novels together. Something that an awful lot of Earthlits have been asking recently is when they're going to get the chance to see the documentary that was made recently about the history of 2000 AD. Future Shock, the story of 2000 AD, is, as I said at the beginning, a fantastic introduction to the history of the galaxy's greatest comic. And you've got people like Pat Mills, Kevin O'Neill, Cybermat, Jason Kingsley. I'm in it as well, but ever so slightly. It's a wonderful, wonderful peek behind the scenes of how 2000 AD has changed, evolved and survived over almost four decades. Real testament to some incredible artistry and hard work. This has been showing at festivals and selected screenings around the UK and abroad, but finally it's going to be available on DVD and on demand. And so we gave Paul Goodwin a call. He's the director of Future Shock, and we asked him why he decided to tell the story of the galaxy's greatest comic. Now, it's a film that we've all enjoyed in the Nerve Centre, and next week you guys all get to see it for yourselves, and I'm really pleased to welcome the director of Future Shock, the story of 2000 AD, Paul Goodwin, onto the Thrillcast. Welcome, Paul.
Hi.
How you doing?
Fine, thank you, mate. How are you?
Good. I'm all right, thank you. So, we're finally here. We're finally at the point that Future Shock is going out to the wider public after quite a while being at festivals and screenings. What's it like for you as a director, having been involved in this project for so long? What's it like finally seeing it going out far and wide?
Wow. Yeah, as you say, finally. I mean, I know a lot of guys, a lot of the fans and stuff have been following the progress of the project since we started, which is kind of 2 years ago now. It feels like a very, very long wait. And we had our earliest festival screenings, preview screenings, you know, were more than a year ago now. So, there was still quite a lot of legal stuff to sort out and tweaks and sort of polishes and edits and stuff, but it's a joy, to be honest, to see something, you know, something which is a real passion project. And it's such a sort of independent production, you know. We've had sort of no backing, and just, you know, more or less conjure something out of thin air just because it was something we really wanted to do and have it, you know, there'd be enough interest in it that we're getting a cinema and DVD release. You know, it's just fantastic.
Yeah. Well, I'm really looking forward to having it in my collection. Tell us a bit about this, the genesis of this passion project. Why did you decide to try and tell a 38-year story?
why did we do it? Well, basically, it was, I mean, the main thing was we were trying to figure out a project to work on together, myself and Sean, with Nick and Jim, who are my business partners and their exec producers. Mm. And, you know, we were just trying to work on trying to figure out a project to do that we all had, you know, some sort of passion for, something we really wanted to do, and something which, it was as simple as this. If we saw somebody else was doing it, we'd be saying, like, oh, man, why didn't we think of that, you know? So, and, you know, we're just always chatting about comics and pop culture and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I just said, look, I tell you what, something, you know, there's a story which has not been told, certainly not in the mainstream at least. And that's, you know, the history of 2000 AD, and kind of all the light bulbs went on, and everyone was like, ding, ding, ding. Wow. Yeah. That's a great idea.
Yeah. And has there ever been a point that you've come to regret having that great idea?
Well, a lot in interviews and stuff, a lot of people sort of ask the question, you know, what's been the most sort of difficult thing?
Hmm.
And even though it was a hell of a lot of hard work, I wouldn't say there's been any part of it where I regretted it. No, absolutely not. Every bit of it has been enjoyable. I mean, it's, you know, we came up with a project that meant we could get to sit down with sort of heroes of ours, you know, and ask the questions that we wanted to know the answers to. And hopefully that's those are the sort of things that other people wanted to hear about as well.
Sure, sure. Doing documentaries about comic books, which are at their very essence, still two-dimensional images. You've gone away from. I've seen documentaries about comic books before that have tried to spin in a lot of animation and try to dramatize what is happening on the page. But you've kind of shoved that aside and very much focused on the personalities involved with 2000 AD. I'm assuming that was a conscious decision on your part that this was a story that you were telling about the comic rather than focusing on the stories in the comic?
Well, a bit of both. I mean, we were lucky, I guess, that once we sort of started to get access to certainly the contributors from, you know, way back in the 70s and 80s.
Mm.
I mean, we were just really lucky that these guys were such huge personalities and were so up for discussing, you know, some of the really interesting things that were going on behind the scenes, that, you know, we knew we had some really interesting content and that they were really entertaining to watch as well. You know, most sure. notably Pat, John Wagner, Alan Grant. I mean, they were kind of angry guys back then, which was like what was behind the comic and the stories. And that anger hasn't really died down at all. You know what I mean? They are as passionate about it today as they ever were.
Mm.
And I think that, you know, that passion is, you know, it really drove the storytelling back then.
Mm.
And, you know, it's just really kind of great to see that they're, you know, they're still fighting the fight, as it were, today, you know? So we were lucky that they were, you know, they all kind of bounced off each other and were really, you know, there were very, very few interviews that we came out of saying, you know, that's going to be, you know, a struggle, but, you know, plenty of material. I mean, so much material, Mike, you know, I mean, I'm sure we've covered this before, but, you know, Pat was so gracious to have us come to his house and interview him, but we did come away with, you know, his sequence of just Pat Mills.
Yeah.
It's like 5.5 hours long, you know, and, but it's just absolutely, you know, and we came back saying, I've said this before as well, but wherever you drop the playhead in that sequence, you just want to sit and listen.
Yeah.
You know,
not having been involved in making documentaries or seeing how they're made. One thing I'm curious about is how you tease out a narrative of a film, whether it's a case of getting all the material together and then deciding, you know, what is the story here, or
as you interview people, do you begin to see emerging patterns, or do you have an idea of what you want to do at the very beginning?
All three, right. In all honesty. Yeah, no, it's true, because, you know, so when we sat down, and certainly when we went, you know, we brought Helen Milan on board very early, and in those early discussions, it was, you know, we were very focused on what is the story we want to tell. And it's not, you know, we never wanted to just do a, hey, look, wasn't Strontium Dog great? Wasn't Nemesis great? Wasn't Rogue Trooper cool? Mm. We wanted it certainly to explore, you know, in a bit more depth, you know, what the comic represents, what impact it had, and also, you know, how things were behind the scenes, how it came to be. So, so we knew we wanted to dig a bit deeper. Then, as you know, people agreed to be to take part in interviews. You know, everybody had their own roles at the comic and their own, you know, specific things we wanted to talk to them about. So every interview was engineered, you know, to ask them about, you know, their personal contributions, and then as everybody had their own personal interview, and then we also asked sort of similar questions of each person, so that when we had the edit, there were some bases which everybody touched on, some subjects we asked everybody about, such as, you know, the general subversion of 2000 AD, you know, the layered storytelling, just so we got kind of everyone's opinion on that as creators, but, you know, also the fans that we spoke to, the cultural commentators that we spoke to, you know, so yeah, it was a bit of all three, really. And then in the edit, you kind of, obviously we have the chronological story, as in, you know, what happened, what was going on in Britain, what the comic scene was like before 2000 AD, how 2000 AD impacted on that on release. How did it go for the first few years? You got the classic era and of the sort of 80s characters, and then, you know, the ups and downs along the way. And really, you know, we sort of realized that the chronology of 2000 AD's history is a kind of, you know, a bit of a rise and fall and rise again classic narrative structure. So you know, that was really what we, and then using that as the spine, you can sort of use, you know, an exploration of the characters and stories along the way, and some of the things that happened to 2000 AD to sort of branch off on tangents and tell little stories, you know, but they're all kind of heading sort of all in the same direction to where it is today.
Could you give an estimate on how many hours of footage in total you had for I mean, the film's what, an hour and 45?
Yeah.
What's that been boiled down from, do you think?
Well, the very, very first cut where I had everything, all the fat cut out and everything that I thought would be good content to choose from.
Yeah.
It played all day long. I mean, it was like 8 or 9 hours worth of stuff.
Blimey.
Well, we interviewed 42 people.
Good God.
And like I said, Pat's interview alone boiled down, but it's like 5.5 hours. And I think the shortest would probably been, you know, 25 minutes, half an hour, something like that.
Yeah.
So varying length of interviews, but, you know, you're talking about, I think they average an hour each, so more than 40 hours down to, you know, a tenth of that. And then it was just hacking chunks out, you know, making chapters, moving the chapters around, sorting the order out. And that basically honed down to, there was a work print of about 3.5 hours.
Yeah.
Which was all this, just the cream of the best stuff. And then basically it was like, you know, sort of like sculpture, you know, just hacking away until we had the final thing.
It sounds very similar to feature writing, where you know, you've got your core stuff in there, but then you really have to kind of kill your babies and be quite ruthless about it.
Yeah, a bit. I mean, there are some chapters which I sort of regret losing a bit, but it was always to serve the story, you know, and anything that I, you know, because I would edit, and then we would, you know, as a group, sort of sit and watch, you know, various prints of it, and everybody would feedback, and we'd all sort of look at what was working best and how. And it was, and it always seemed to be, look, we're drifting away from the story of 2000 AD. Mm. We've gone too far down this route of, I don't know, there was a really nice section where we explored through analysing Judge Dredd, and as a iconic British comics character, and Batman as an iconic American character, we went down a road where we explored how British and American audiences, you know, react differently to, you know, the hero versus the anti-hero. Why in Britain, you know, we stick two fingers up to authority and the Americans sort of don't or can't. Mm. You know, and to me, I thought it was all fascinating stuff, but away from away from the story of 2008. Sure. So ultimately it did get chopped down. But
I mean, that was going to be my next question, was there a bit that you really regret not being able to include?
The thing I do regret the most is that, Mike, you know, there are so many great characters that have you know, graced the pages over the years, and the only regret is that, you know, you just can't dig. There just isn't the time to dig so deep into all of them. I mean, there's plenty of artwork for Rogue Trooper, but he kind of doesn't get as big a mention as like Strontium Dog or Nemesis, and that was purely because, you know, through say a character like Nemesis the Warlock, you know, that character is such a great lens to explore, you know, what Pat was trying to do, you know, the subversion he was trying to put into that story, his experience of Catholicism and all of that. You know, Nemesis served as a great lens to look at that stuff through. And Rogue Trooper sort of, it just didn't kind of offer up that same like level of exploration of stuff. So it's sad, really sad, you know. Same for Slain and ABC Warriors, and the list just goes on and on and on.
Well, I mean, bear in mind, I've just started a web series, the ABC of 2000 AD. And just the bare minimum list of series that we're focusing on with each episode is currently at 79. So, you know,
but therein is the problem, you know. Yeah. When you have something that's been successful for 40 years, and there's that many things out there in popular culture that have lasted that long. Mm. You know, I mean, it's on the one hand it's a joy, but on the other it's a bit of a, I guess it can be a beast of burden.
Well, this is the I think the accomplishment that you guys have got with Future Shock is being able to boil down so many ups and downs, so much information down into an hour and 45 minutes, and for there to be a story in there, for it to make sense, for it to be fulfilling and interesting, but then to have there be so many other stories to tell, you know?
Mm.
I think that's kind of the remarkable thing about 2000 AD, and the remarkable thing about Future Shock is even when you try to tell the core story, there's still so much more that, you know, you could focus on.
Well, obviously, I mean, yeah, it's true, and I think we always thought this would be the case, but, you know, we had the fantastic preview screening at the BFI. And it was just brilliant because the, you know, the Facebook communities and the hardcore fans who have bought the comic for so many years, you know, they all mobilized and came down. I mean, it was just such a great experience to watch it in their presence, because and be able to go out and shake their hands and say, you know, this film is for you guys, really, you know. And straight away, you know, they were kind of like, yeah, the film's great. When can we have the extra footage? When can we see the rest of it? Well, there must be tons of it. And it's like, one day, hopefully.
Yeah, so one day we could get like a director's cut.
Well, I mean, it's all archived. I've got it all. Right. I hope so. I mean, I think the thing is, the decision is not really up to us. The distributor, you know, is putting the DVD out for us in the cinema release, which is fantastic. And I mean, that is such a great achievement. to get that far. I think it's just a matter of we'll get that sort of out of the way and then just basically see how it's received. And if there's enough interest, I would love one day to be able to put more stuff out. There's so many, obviously, media channels now. I'm sure there'll be a way to be able to get that out at some point in the future.
Sure, sure.
This way, I mean, if it was me and I saw a 2000 AD film coming out, I'd be exactly the same. I'd be like, I want a 5.5 hour Pat Mills.
Was there anybody that you weren't able to interview for whatever reason, whether they said no or whether you just weren't able to get hold of them, or you know, maybe they passed on, that you wish you could have interviewed for the film?
No.
Right.
Okay. No, I'm joking. Of course, we would have loved to have spoken to Alan Moore.
Mm.
So it's a shame that. It's a shame that his voice is not part of the conversation about 2000 AD, I think. It's a bit sad. But, you know, he has his reasons, which are well documented, for not wanting to talk about, you know, that era or that part of his career. So we did ask. We sent him a message, you know, in the way that he'd been asked to be contacted and just basically got a polite... he politely declined, so that's fine. And I think I think in all honesty, Mike, we knew when we started out that Alan Moore was going to be, you know, it was a long shot really to get involved, as he's sort of put on record that he doesn't, you know, want to speak about that era. So, but you know, at the same time, we were so super pleased to get, you know, got, you know, contributors of the caliber of Neil Gaiman and Grant Morrison and Pat and certainly John Wagner and Alan Grant, and God, you know, not, you know, leaving so many people out, but you know, it was just you know, we were really pleased that those guys were happy to talk to us. So, you know, it was a shame, but there were a couple of guys who we would have liked to have spoken to as well, who you know, schedules just didn't work out.
Mm.
As well, but you know, there's enough. There's enough. 42 people was plenty. Geez.
What I really like about it is that it's not just 2000 AD speed people that you've spoken to, but you've also got the kind of lens from outside of it as well, because it's very easy to kind of God knows with my career, it's very easy to sit within this 2000 AD bubble and be very happy there, but actually, you know, how other people see the comic is, and its legacy outside of the UK, is very important. And of course, you've got Karen Berger, former head of Vertigo. You've got Will Dennis, who's a former Vertigo editor. And you've got Scott Ian from Anthrax in yes. there as well, talking about the influence of 2008. And I was particularly gratified and pleased to hear Karen say, without 2008, there'd be no Vertigo.
She did,
and you know, yeah. Without Vertigo, then adult comics as we know them from the American mainstream, so you know, things like Image and whatnot wouldn't exist. And I think that's a remarkable thing to hear anyway. But in a documentary like this, it's great to see that all those people that you've interviewed about why 2000 AD is great. It's not just they who work on it think that. It's actually people far outside of it.
Oh no, and there was no, no. I mean, Karen and Will, as a sort of from the American perspective, were both more than happy to sort of you know, talk about that. And Mike, to be honest, you know, I'm 41, so I probably
that's a very brave admission. Well done.
That's all right. But you know, so my era of buying and hardcore collecting and crate digging through the old progs was like, you know, 85 to 90, where yeah. I sort of really latched onto it and discovered it, and it spoke to me as a young lad. So, but that era as well. It was the era where those guys had just started to go to the States, you know, just pre-Vertigo. And that was my experience. You know, I used to go down and hang out at Calamity down in Harrow every day and just chat to these guys. And it seemed every week there was, you know, something new was coming out with Gibbons or Bolland, or, and then, you know, Alan Moore, obviously, and then Grant Morrison was going over there, and Milligan and other guys. And we were sort of, it was like our guys were going over there, you know, and it, we were so proud to see them going over and not just being printed, but really kicking ass and changing things. And Vertigo was a great imprint, you know, as Jock says in the film, it's as close as anything in the States to 2000 AD in its sort of sensibility. So, you know, that was, you know, all of us on the, who were involved in the production of Future Shock, that was our experience of that era. So that was, you know, a really important part of the story to tell. You follow that trail of breadcrumbs and look how, you know, Watchmen, Killing Joke, you know, Arkham Asylum, look how those books changed American comics, you know, and you keep following that trail of breadcrumbs and you're like, okay, look how those comics changed, you know, mainstream comics in the States, and look how mainstream comics in the States have now changed pop culture at large. I mean, look at this, look at what's on at the cinema, you know, in the last couple of years. So, you know, that was really the also one of the main stories we wanted to tell was 2000 AD, the unsung hero of pop culture, you know?
Absolutely. And it's going to be great to see it on being able to be viewed more widely than just screenings and festivals. So it's going to be available on iTunes.
It is, yeah.
I think it's on PSN Network.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, the digital and DVD release is all set for the 7th of December. It will be screening in selected cinemas the week before that.
Okay. So how will people be able to find out those where those cinemas are?
As soon as I know anything, I'll be putting out on social media. We'll post details as we have them.
Great. Well, I mean, from everybody at 2000 AD, I think I speak for us all when I say thanks so much for doing what is a fantastic summation of the history of the comic book that we all know and love. We've all thoroughly enjoyed it. The movie poster that you sent us is now up on the wall in the Nerve Center, just above a big Mick McMahon print. Can't wait to see the wider reaction. So, thank you to all of you guys for bringing this story out.
Mike, don't thank us, mate. Thank you and everybody involved for, you know, being part of something which made us passionate about to want to get off our backsides and tell the story. So thank you.
I'd like to welcome all of you to a new section in the 2008 forecast. We talked about it a little bit last time, which is Ask Tharg. Now, some of you have sent in your questions to the Mighty One for him to answer. For those of you who don't know, 2000 AD is actually edited by an alien called Tharg the Mighty, who hails from the planet Quaxan in the Betelgeuse system. He maintains an army of droids who put together 2000 AD every single week, along with the Judge Dredd magazine and our graphic novels. Now, I had intended for this section to be a chat with the chief editorial droid, Cyber Matt, who was on in the last episode. Unfortunately, as I was discussing this at his cubicle, I heard a voice from many levels above in the Nerve Center at 2000 AD. And, well, it's a pretty loud voice because it could travel all the way down to sub-basement 7D. And it was the Mighty One himself who decided that, that actually, since the questions were addressed to him, he would shove Cybermat aside and answer them himself. So it is with a little bit of nervousness, but also a great deal of pride and joy and happiness that I welcome Tharg the Mighty himself to the 2000 AD Thrillcast. Welcome, Mighty One.
Thank you, Mulchar. Since I am indeed mighty, I thought it best
that I answer these questions myself, for there are no greater Earthlets amongst you than the Squawkstick Thargo, who read 2000 AD every week. I won't let a lowly droid answer on my behalf.
Well, that's very nice of you, Mighty One, and thank you for being here. Obviously, we've had to put up quite a bit of thrill power shielding in order to get your voice onto tape. So I'll apologise to everyone listening at home in case there's any distortion on the Mighty One's voice.
Distortion?
Yes. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with your voice, Mighty One. Anyway, so we're going to get on the questions, okay? So Earthlet Jim Hayes asks, is there any chance Armitage will be returning at any point?
He will indeed be back, Earthlet Hayes, but perhaps not where you expect. Keep watching the progs in 2016, Squawkstick Thargo.
Okay, that's fantastic. Thank you very much indeed. I believe you blew several of the thrill power shields, so... Hopefully we got that on tape. Now, Earthlet Hayes also asks, is there any hope 2000 AD will manage to achieve the same with Scream, which is the old comic book, now that that door has been opened with the news about Misty and, with so much 2000 AD talent being involved?
Such information is, alas, a closely guarded secret within the nerve center. And only my mighty self and a few trustworthy droids are privy to what I have planned in the next couple of years. Mechquake is kept well fed on minions with loose lips. Don't forget that, Molchar. All I can say is, exciting announcements will be forthcoming!
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mighty One. One of my visual receptors just blew thanks to that warning. So thank you for that. Earthlet Patrick, I'm afraid he doesn't give a surname, says, I argue with my brother that the blocks in Judge Dredd during the early years were sometimes named after random comedy or TV characters, such as Jimmy Clitheroe and Fred G. Am I right?
Yes, the block names were, and indeed continue to be, inspired by whomever happened to be on the TV that night or the script droid was rattling towards a deadline.
That's awesome. Thank you, Mighty One. An Earthlet who identifies himself as Rory says, whatever happened to readers' letters page drawings? Because, of course, we, as I'm sure you know full well, Mighty One, we used to feature readers' drawings in the Nerve Centre on a fairly regular basis. So he just wants to know what happened to them.
Simply, Squawkstick Thargo stopped sending them in. I am willing to publish reader's art if it's sent into the regular email address.
Okay, so for those who don't know what the regular email address for the letters page is, it's input@2000adonline.com. That's input@2000adonline.com. So, send your artwork in, and Tharg, if he chooses you to be blessed with his approval, we'll publish it in the letters page. So we just have one more question, the mighty one. I appreciate the amount of time that you're taking here. Earthlet Will O'Connor says, there's a Dredd story that I remember reading as a child but can't remember the name of. All I remember is that it involved a serial killer who would stitch his victim's eyes, ears and mouth closed and leave a note written in blood saying, see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil. He just wondered what that story was.
You'll have to try harder than that to test me, human. The story you're referring to was a two-part heavy metal Dredd story called Monkey Beat, which was originally published in Judge Dredd magazine, volume 2, number 34, to volume 2, number 35, written by John Smith and illustrated by the late John Hicklinton Droid. This was reprinted in the Heavy Metal Dredd collection, which is available now!
And on that note, I see that the Mighty One has left. I want to thank him so much for his time. It's been great to have him in the office. We have now gone blind and indeed deaf with the awesome thrill power emanating from his mightiness. So thank you for the questions, Earthlets. If you want to ask Tharg the Mighty a question yourself, then please do email thrillcast@2000adonline.com. thrillcast@2000adonline.com. And Tharg the Mighty himself might answer one in a future Thrillcast. Well, I would like to thank everyone who's been on this episode of the 2000 AD Thrillcast, especially Tharg the Mighty himself. I apologise for the glitches in my vocal circuits. It's going to take a while to repair the damage just from having him down in this sub-basement. We're really not used to the crackling thrill power of the editor of 2000 AD. So until next time...
Splendid the Thring.
Now, are you reading the galaxy's greatest comic? 2000 AD is in orbit every Wednesday from all good news agents and comic book stores. 2000 AD is also available digitally. You can get PDF copies, which are DRM-free, from our website at www.2000adonline.com, or you can download the free 2000 AD app for Apple and Android devices. Now, you get that by searching for 2000 space AD in iTunes and the Google Play Store. There's also the Judge Dredd magazine, which is published in print and digital every month with more pages, more Dredd-centric stories, special features, and a bagged reprint magazine featuring forgotten 2000 AD classics. And don't forget that our graphic novels, including absolute timeless classics like Strontium Dog, Ace Trucking, Flesh, Judge Dredd, Slain, Robo Hunter, and many, many more, are also available digitally through our webshop and app. We're on social media with the latest announcements, competitions and freebies. Search on Facebook and Google Plus for 2000 AD. If you're on Instagram, we're Insta2000AD, and you can follow us on Twitter where we are at 2000AD. In the meantime, all hail Tharg the Mighty and Splundig Verthrig, Earthlets.